Hi everyone. I'm delighted to introduce the last talk before we go on lunch break, but the last talk also of this panel. And I'm particularly delighted to introduce Patrick Mudike-Reza, who I'm sure I pronounced it wrong, although I asked you, but almost, who is the director of the Centre d'Art Weser, and the co-founder of the Recompensa Lubumbashi Biennale, which I believe he was also the curator of for the first 3 years. No, I read that wrong information. Over the last 10 years, Patrick has realized a number of important art projects. He was a member of the steering committee of the Arterial Network and as a member of the Cultural Policy Task Force for the country. In 2014, he received a National Award for Art and Culture from the Congolese Ministry of Culture. His presentation aims to give an overview of social practices in the Democratic Republic of Congo through three projects spanning a period of 30 years, asking how citizen engagement in political decisions, environmental crisis, and economic inequalities were addressed at the intersection of art, activism, and academia. So without further ado, Patrick.
There we go. Hello, so my name is Patrick, and I'm coming from Lubumbashi in Congo. I need to apologize for a couple of things. The first is my English. I'm not a native English speaker, as many of us, I suppose, but I was educated in French, so sometimes I can drop words in French expecting from a translation to raise from the audience. And the second is my non-so-academic background that I'm trying to improve. I'm mainly coming from the field, so very recently I just feel the need to go back to university and study art history and challenging with academic writing. So I didn't go through the process of writing a paper, just put some images to comment and share with you here. So that said, the invitation was when I received from Alia the very kind invitation to participate here. I said, okay, great, I will have an opportunity to speak about what we are doing at Waza Art Center, and especially Revolution Room, which is a project we really think was a kind of turnover of a large discussion we were into since 2010 when we started the center. And then I said it's maybe also the occasion to think more broadly about what the question that we were facing with Revolution Room means in a broader level, in a longer term in the country. And it will definitely not be an overview, but it will be material that I have access to around in terms of books and encounter with people to try to understand what we mean by social practices in Congo. I wanted to present a very personal project, but I think that will get shorter time for the discussion. So I will jump into the three projects that I want to discuss. The first one is Group Amos. Group Amos in the 90s was very present, and many of us in the art field don't take it very seriously because we most see it as more as an activist project until Okwie Nwozo came to Congo and take it as the representative of the platform in Kassel, and then we need to rethink, and then, okay, maybe this is art, an art project, and that says a lot about how we look on those things. So a second project, which is more like serious art project, because those people came from the Académie des Beaux-Arts and came from a very institutional art, contemporary art field, is a collective SADI, which came shortly after another collective named Collectif Esa Possible in Kinshasa in the 2000s. And this collective was did a project named Tokokende Wapi, means Where Shall We Go? And the last project, the one I'm involved in, is the Revolution Room project, which was followed with, had an iteration in a very recent project that we named Mitaani Mapping Moment. So these are the three case studies I will go through and discuss with you about, and conclude a little bit about what I think on my personal level about the three projects. So Group Amos, as I said, is for some of us an invention of the late Okwuenuozo in the art field, but it's raised very interesting question for us because it helped us to understand how many aspects of the 90s, which is considered as a blank moment in the art in Congo. So what was done during this crisis? Mobutu decided in 1990 to democratize the country. So we went from the parti état, so one party for all of us. From even before you are born, you are part of that party. Even the ancestors were part of the party. That was said very clearly in the propaganda, and it was democratized. But at the same time, he wanted to have more control of everything because he was much, he wanted to control especially the elites of the country. So everything that was produced and disseminated around the elites was very controlled. And Group Amos decided to move beyond the formal institution and to focus on illiterates. And the main idea was how focusing on illiterate is preparing actually the upcoming elections that they were hoping to have, and they didn't get all the time Mobutu was still in power. Okwuenuozo was saying that creating social spaces is actually on itself an artwork in the article he published in 2004. So what they are doing with Group Amos was publishing this kind of cartoons and comics that was, it can be seen as an advertisement for how to vote, the kind of flyers that you can see everywhere. But from the late 90s in Congo, it's very funny because no one was believing that we'll never go to elections. So trying to distribute flyers about a non-existing elections that is on paper upcoming but will never come became on itself a kind of action to raise awareness about citizen engagement and public participation. There was also very active in a protest that was held on the 16th of February 1992. It's named La Marche des Chrétiens, so the protest by the Christians. And this one of the biggest protests that was bloodily repressed in Congo. And 10 years after that, they also do a kind of remembering of that. What is interesting with what Group Amos was doing is how all those very low-cost and accessible as well in terms of languages, because it was translated in Lingala, in the vernacular language in Kinshasa, creates a kind of archive of the struggle against Mobutu. And then, of course, the consecration was the Documenta 11 presentation here in Germany. So The archive is not only material, it's also audiovisual with theater performances. And the, as I said, the biggest, the founder of the group Amos was both coming from the religions movement and also university. And one of them, who is named Thierry Landou, is a professor with whom I had a couple of interviews a few months ago. When I start to become more interested by what it means actually to be part of that resistance kind of movement. Thierry Landou came back to my attention because he was also very involved last year when we were facing the same situation of postponing election, what we call in French in Congo glissement, so like glittering. So the term of the president is finished, but he stayed two more years claiming that there's no money to organize elections. And Thierry Landou was again in the front line of that protest. So from he, from that involvement, I started to find a kind of coherent engagement for citizen participation. So what he said in an article he published for Third Text is Group Amos' commitment to changing Congolese society through nonviolent strategies is evident by numerous inspirational and informative projects. In particular, Group Amos has focused on the plight of the woman in short video documentaries such as Congo aux deux visages, L'espérance têtue d'un peuple in 1997, Femme congolaise, femme aux mille bras, in 1997, Au nom de ma foi, Seigneur, La violence me sculpta femme, Your violence made me a woman, sculpta, sculpts me a woman, I would say. A video in Lingala, a vernacular language in Kinshasa, which celebrate the power of Congolese women who struggle for rights in a context where traditions, custom, religion, and even existing laws do not facilitate equality. So beyond the question of the citizen participation, there was also taking in account the gender, the inequality in the country, which is something very is very strong, like we are facing that on a daily basis in Congo. So theater, video production, picture boxes, debate provide forum in which common social, cultural, political, and economic issues are discussed, at the same time offering social spaces marked by gaiety, humor, and laughter that enable the creation of self-awareness, the negotiation of new identities, partnership, and leadership, and the elaboration of new discourse concerning the Congolese social identity, ethical behavior, and politics. So the first step of this encounter between the literate and the illiterate is through exercise of social analysis, during which they both conjugate three essential verbs, namely to see, to judge, and to act. That is still Professor Landou saying. But their relationship to the verbs is different. Contrary to the intellectual, who has a tendency to see only with his mind, the illiterate offer the advantage to see both with both body and mind. He sees with his brain, his eyes, his belly, his ears, his nose. Namoni in Lingala means to see in all your senses. This engagement might explain the vision of the intellectual, the powerful, to humanize and to moralize it. I really like this quote, even if I take a certain distance from it, especially when he divides the question of Namoni, to I see with all my senses, only for the illiterate. But what is very important for me there is the way we interact in an exhibition or in an artistic production or in a cultural event, where we move beyond the only brain and one single sense interacted with this. And I really like the in the phrasing of the senses, it also puts like the belly, and it's very bodily engagement with the topic, and especially with this kind of topics where it leads to action because after seeing, judging, you need to act. Actually, if you don't see with your body, the body will not know where to go. So it's very important to see how the idea of namoni, I see, is also appealing to see with our body entirely. So it's very important to understand this question of the empathy that such a project is providing to us in connection with how we move into action and what kind of references we work into that. So they start to conceive what they call the didactic conscience, didactic tools. And those tools that the one I've shown you was disseminated all over the country. And another element that I think is very important for Group Amos is the connection they had with the liberation theology, and especially how they get the inspiration with Tucumán Arde project in Argentina, was also fighting the dictatorship in the 60s. So what they say at the end of this quote is that Group Amos promulgates an African concept of art that acknowledges an equilibrium between art for art's sake and the utilitarian art. Beauty and truth being children for the same mother, now that is life. So how to move beyond this discussion about art for art's sake, as Heba was saying this morning, and the utilitarian arts, and to see that actually we are speaking about life, and then the life can express itself in many different aspects. So this is to move to SADI Collective. SADI Collective stands for Solidarité des Artistes pour le Développement Intégral, Solidarity for Artists for Integral Development. I don't think they really like the long name. It's very heavy and very humanitarian in a way. But so everyone named them for as SADI. So the project Tokendewapi Tozo Kendewapi in 2008 was a founding project, the project who gave them the momentum to operate as a collective. Especially the project was started in an erosion, in an area where there was an erosion in Kinshasa, in a neighborhood named Kindele, very close to the Kinshasa University. And the four artists, Yves Sambu, Freddy, Francis Tenda, Patti Chindele, and Alain Polo, decided to go to that neighborhood where the houses was destroyed, and people tried to find other spaces to live in tents. They start a conversation with them and start to draw in the walls the discussion they were having with the people whose house were destroyed. And one of the phrases that was coming every time was this, Toko Kende Wapi, where shall we go now that we don't have any house? And they took from the beginning a strong statement to not build the project as a protest. So they want to ask the question in a very constructive way, and they actually succeed to put the government not as opponent to the project, but as participants. Because at the end, when they did a photo exhibition, even the governor of Kinshasa came and did a big speech about how they will restore everything. And of course, as you know about politician speeches, the situation is not fixed until now. So the space, so the first exhibition space was actually the neighborhood with the paintings and the quotes from the discussions on the walls. But there was also a couple of installations, I think I don't have the images here, with the object that was remaining in the house to give them a kind of artistic setting from there. And actually they left. They was not completely out of the context because they were living there for a month, a full month, and doing all their daily activities, not only the artistic residency, but it was really a residency in all its sense. I was also living with those people and discussing with them. So from this experience, they started two approach which are mutually nourish each other. One is named inter-influence, inter-influence, and the second one is socio-poésie. So I was discussing with Yves to understand a little bit more what he called inter-influence. It was how to generate artistic projects through a direct dialogue by gathering opinions on social commitment, human conditions, and the ecosystem. And the socio-poésie is actually reporting that approach in a poetical manner. So socio-poésie became like the after tool of the inter-influence methodology. So that is very important because the same momentum they started in Kindele neighborhood continue to nourish them, and they decided to take every year for the National Day, the 30th of June, a public event where they invite different people to do inter-influence with them, with their artwork. So, few words about WAZA, the art center I'm running. It's founded in 2010. It's an artistic resource and project initiator, speaking strongly to the specific history and contemporary reality of Lubumbashi, the second city of Congo. We work with artists, but also with researchers, cultural and social actors of Lubumbashi and the region to develop experimental artistic practices. So sometimes we have exhibitions. So this, it's actually your house, you'll see it. And this is supposed to be the lounge of the house that we use for as a project space to show artworks. This is a project with street kids after a workshop they have done with professional artists. We also have a big courtyard that we use for concerts, because this is Shongo, a musician, was for the first time trying to collaborate with a visual videographer, and a lot of talks. This is as well the bar of the art center. Here we are doing a project with Nontobe Kontombela, a curator from Johannesburg, and a couple of artists, including Hilary Balou in the front, who is from Kinshasa. So the project I want to present for WAZA is named Revolution Room, and was done from 2013 to 2016. I will only present one of the location where the project was, which is Lubumbashi. There were three other locations, one in Johannesburg, Cosmo City neighborhood, and two other in Congo, in Fungurume, in a mining rural area, and in Moba, which is a small city close to the Tanganyika Lake at the border with Tanzania. So Revolution Room was a project where we decided to think of public space, but also museum practices towards communities. And in this very picture, you have Professor Dibwe in the center, who is explaining images and collection that he gathered through a project named Mémoire de Lubumbashi, Memories of Lubumbashi, in the early 2000s. So we use the collection, they collected through oral history thousands of objects connecting to people life history, and they gathered those objects after doing the exhibition in the National Museum. So we went to the same neighborhood. We invited 20 persons to go back to that collection and to give new narrative on the story. But if the first academic project of historical project was about the history of the city, we tried to focus more specifically on a community of départ volontaire, which is 10,000 former workers of the mining city who were voluntarily pushed to resign from the company. So it was resize of the company. The company has 40,000 employees and not enough money to pay them. So they decided that all the employee who has been working for more than 25 years could receive a grant and renounce to the retreat. So no more retreats, but a grant to make them businessmen. But of course, they didn't become businessmen. And 10 years after that, it was a very big desolation in the neighborhood. So we wanted to face this nostalgia of the area of the mining city by activating this collection of objects, but also to invite young people to discuss with them about what it means for them to be part of that historical legacy of the mining city. So this is one of the first steps when we went to the museum and we select objects of that from that museum. And we had a very participative discussion about both the narrative connects to every object. So the text about the object was conceived by everyone who picked it up and connected to his own life history. One of our ideas was we were very interested by the notion of shared authority. So how we can share curatorial authority with the 20 persons that we were working with. And that works very well for selecting the object, putting the narrative in. But the moment when we decided to set up the exhibition, like the real curatorial scenography, became a very messy problem. And that the moment when we decided to let the people go, sit down and do the curatorial work as we know we have to do it. And that, for us, was very important to also understand the limits of those methodology that we try to borrow in a context. Because, of course, we were the only person who has seen exhibitions. So in that neighborhood, there have never been any exhibition. For many of those people, it was the first time they're thinking of an exhibition. And we were balancing between trying to be very radical in the way that we listen to their voice and we follow their methodology in an extreme way. But that was not pleasing us at a certain moment. I think also being able to understand at which moment we allow ourselves to do what we really want to do was a very interesting process. So we had these three models of putting the object. One that we call the nostalgia, like putting everything on the ground. And the second one is to create a dialogue around the object, so all the objects are on the table, so people are sitting, and then the object can be touched and then moved. And the last one was the dialogue with the object, not around, not having the object as a starting point of the dialogue, but to see the object as interlocutor, so to put them at the site level and hang like that. And of course, every situation has their pro and contra. And of course, the most museum way of doing is the third one. And of course, that's the one that we did. And also because it was also quite easy to maintain, because in the two other cases, you need a proper mediation, education team to be there every time someone is there. And of course, you can say that it's maybe it's a pity to make it that way. But of course, that's what we have the means to do. So we hang the object and we also attach narrative of the object. So like for this bottle on the wall, there was a caption, which is the narrative of that person. And we owe the narrative, we also put a timeline outside the house so people could follow the different stories of the people. So we also published a book, Revolution Room, in 2017, I think, with the four locations, the history and all the discussion that we had. I think I might have two of copies of this book that I can share with you if you want to know more about it. But it's also accessible on free access on internet, on WAZA website. So after that long process, more very recently, we had a request from an academic from the University of Vienna, Daniela Waldberger, in the center of the photo, to use the same community to do our research. And we agree with her that, okay, we can help you to put in contact with them, but then we will request that you report to them when you have finished doing your research, you come back and have a proper discussion with everyone on what you have done with what they have given to you. And she was very happy, and we say, okay, let's continue this dream about sharing authority. So after she came twice, and the third year was this year, she came for what we call a baraza, like an open conversation, and we divided the group on smaller group like this one. It was more than 100 persons in the group. So she had small conversation on specific topics where she kind of report what her conclusion. But of course, the discussion was not conclusive. No one was agreeing that she was doing the right conclusion. But the aim was not to reach an agreement, but it was to gather, to continue this multivocal research. And after that, we invited all the papas and the mamas to Waza Art Center, and we asked a drawer to take all the notes we have taken of the conversation and to fill the wall with the keyword that was there. And what was also very interesting, that even for that work, they was asking us to correct the name of this, the year of that, or the misspelling of everything. And so the process of the exhibition became like this idea of erasing and add on. And at the end, it became quite dirty, but that was part of the challenges. Another space of intervention that we were doing, and that will be, I hope, the last one, is how we try to operate in the context of museums. So in 2018, we did this project named Di Solo. And on the same way, we invited artists to reinterpret the collection of the National Museum of Lubumbashi. But also, we also gathered some documentation and create what we call a photocopy tech. So it's a photocopies of interesting texts that are available in our library. But then everyone could take it and do some copies. What is very interesting is for us to create what Christina Krebs named museum mindedness. Because in our context, as I said, people don't go every day to the museum. So when they come, they have their own means of interpretation and appropriation of museological concepts to fit into their own cultural patterns. So to appropriate a museology, to have an appropriate museology, became a bottom-up, community-based approach that combined locals' knowledge and resource with those of professional museum to work to better meet the needs and interests of a particular museum and its community. So for us, it's very important to understand that if art is universal, a museum experience is cultural. And at that time, how we can create new ways of showing artworks or knowledge that makes sense in our context. And this idea of shared curatorial authority, coined by Michael Frisch as the interaction between the oral historian and the narrator, has a shared process of authorship and interpretative authority. In other words, both the academic historian and the person who contribute to historical understanding through his lived experience contribute to the development of the interview. So the interviewee is not a passive giver, he's also active. He's also sometimes trying to push the discussion in one direction or the other. And this idea moved away from oral history and became very important in curatorial process. But what is very interesting is how Michael Frisch seems to not be very happy of people thinking that he has found the tool to make good exhibition. He didn't coin it to for that. So that the shared authority is not ideal. It's just one of the tools. So I will conclude with this question about what is art in all this and what is African art in all this, by pointing this quote in Lingala named Esthétique et Boma Vélo. It's very common when you do something and you overdo it in Kinshasa, they say to you, Esthétique et Boma Vélo. It means the aesthetics killed the bike. But then the biggest question will be, what is the bike in this sense? And for me, the big question is, today we all always see African art through the lens of the race of the arts market. Now the arts market, millions, like I think Sherry Samba from Congo or Ellen Atsui are selling very well. And at the other level, you are seeing African art through the lens of this debate on restitution. Like Humboldt Forum here, we will have things back in our country. But no one is really interested by understanding in which kind of setting those objects can be activated in our context and what it will mean. And my opinion is that if we don't really start to recreate mediums for exhibition, for education in our context, we all those money and objects will not find a place to live. And that, I think, that's the kind of work that I'm more interested in with Waza Art Center. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patrick, for this wonderful talk. I think it touched on so many points that were raised throughout the day, and also kind of maybe provided us, I hope, an opportunity to be a little more precise with some of the questions that were raised. Unless there's any immediate questions, I will start. I was thinking a lot during your talk from the first example you gave of group Amos, and it was this kind of funny moment of embarrassed acknowledgement when you said that this wasn't considered, a lot of people didn't see it as art in the community, and then it was kind of picked up by Inveso and for Documenta, and then kind of internationally perceived or celebrated as this kind of socially engaged practice. But then I thought it was also very beautifully problematized or highlighted by what they wrote about, this kind of, they had this beautiful way of saying this about, what was it, art and truth being the children of the same mother, yes. Which brought me back to Susanne's question of, is the art in relational art what is actually to blame in this kind of problem. And I thought maybe this Amos, this quote by Amos, and also a lot of the things you, I think, went through in the presentation, maybe this echoes something from what was said earlier about the messiness or dirt. I propose to call it compost. But also the if we think of Mary Douglas's idea of dirt as something which is intrinsically linked with a definition of purity, so maybe the problem is rather, and this again also echoes the jute, the dirt which is left on the glass, which is just a fact of being. It's not something which we can plan. Maybe this all echoes the fact that the problem is rather with the idea that any art cannot be relational, and that any relation cannot be art. In that sense, with the purity of these two concepts as a construct, as a binary opposition, which I think the quote already kind of undermines. Both are the children of the same mother. So that was just a thought, maybe relation, because it seems so pertinent to all of the projects, you know, where you also now you said there was this moment where you had in the revolution room, you had to, it got messy, and you had to take this curatorial authority and make an exhibition, and you even chose the most quote-unquote conservative version, but maybe that wasn't an either-or choice, because there was this entire process, you know, there was a lot of jute in the process. So yes, that's maybe my first comment question.
Yes, I think for one of the challenge of the process, and of course here I only speak about the last years of my involvement with the Art Center. The first 5 years was much more trying to be visible on the international art scene and doing a lot of projects for that sake, and being in a way quite successful. I've been speaking in this very room about other projects many years ago. But finding that, I really connected with everything that Heba was saying, that you don't need to continue producing projects because you find money to make it. And there is this interesting idea about finding a balance between the chaos and the order. And the most innovative, the most generative space is actually this chaos order, the chaos in between. And for us, it was very important in the process of Revolution Room to sometimes be in the chaos, sometimes claiming the order, and finding the balance between that. And when I'm saying that, I'm very happy with the decision we have done of hanging the object, and probably I will not be happy with the two others. But of course, it's very conservative. Of course, we didn't go far enough, but that means as well that we were not ready to do that way. If we were at home, maybe if it was today, because this exhibition was now 5 years ago, maybe we will have done it differently. I think it's very important in this chaos order to understand that even that balance is something very specific to a moment. And at another moment, with another humor, you can find other balance. But to not think that you need more chaos than you need, and to understand that you need more order than you need.
Yeah, and maybe it's even this formal decision of, you know, chaos versus order, one way of hanging a work versus another, is also kind of contingent, as you say, on the social context, or if you feel this would work, like you say now, you know, if you maybe in a different situation, social situation, you would feel you could push it further, but this is always kind of, by definition, socially contingent. So form is contingent on the social condition, situation, situatedness. I also thought that Heba's story about having to situate herself on this axis was really echoed beautifully in this example, that you can be kind of both, not have to choose. And maybe the moments that this choice is introduced is the moment of when you have like a monetary value ascribed onto something, even though that's also can be messier than we sometimes think, I think. Are there any immediate questions? Yes, question there.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was very impressed with your presentation. I wanted to go back to, first of all, the name Amos. we know that's his prophet, but the wonderful thing about Amos is that he comes, he's the first one of the prophets, in biblical prophets, who goes from idol worship to ethics. Before Amos, you have the great sin is idol worship. That means having objects that you create and you pray to. And Amos says, no, ethics is the most important. So maybe that is one of the directions that you thought of, but it's just a question, of course. But what interests me very much is the whole idea of seeing, judging and acting. Because what I heard from your talk is really a deep-seated and very critical attitude towards Western methodology. Because in Western methodology, you have aesthetics and ethics. But not only that, you also have reason is one thing, and ethics is another thing. That means reason and ethics are not always connected. And now, to translate that, because we're all doing translations all the time, of course, and of course, when I heard the word baraza, all of a sudden I said, oh yeah, that's what conversation is for you. You hear this word baraza, you know. It's a totally different sound, it's a totally different feeling that you have with it and that I have with it. So actually my question is, in which way do you think that this whole project, which is of course a critique of colonization, and you yourself say I speak French better than I speak English, and this is European colonization now, but the whole problem I think lies, of course, in chaos and order, but I also think in pre-modern societies there is a lot of order, but we think it's chaos, but it's not chaos. To come to my question is, in which way do you think that projects like that can influence also the language that we Western use to describe what you're doing? Because that is the biggest problem. How can we find a methodology, a jargon, a discourse that describes this? So that is why I would encourage you to develop your own discourse. You can say, okay, in French it will be like that, and maybe in German and German language it's even more complicated. And I think this is a real challenge for us, Western-minded, whatever. Thanks.
Yes, I'm really sensitive to words and language because my first involvement in the arts was through writing. And the question of translation is, of course, a very big issue. And I have the feeling that we can learn a lot from... One thing that is very important is how the contemporary art becoming a particular dialect inside English, and how we can all contribute in it, and how far we will be able to contribute to it. I think German, because of the way they've been influential, is maybe more efficient in advocating for words inside that. We start to understand German language words in so-called contemporary art. How can we have Swahili words? How can we have Lingala words, Wolof words in that? I don't know if this will be a clear aim for people like ourselves, where we don't have enough means to do our work, and if we want to challenge the big machines of the contemporary art world, I think we will lose a lot of time and means to produce books that no one will read that we have done. But at the same time, I think making that information available and finding particular coalitions is very strong, because dropping a word in Kiswahili in a space like this, of course, it can have an influence. Writing it in a book, it can have an influence. But the most important influence is how this word, this context, can be shared with someone, can be lived with someone. For instance, one of my friends, Tristan Guillou, who is French, spent the full month of that exhibition in that house, and he knows now how to speak, how we speak, what is a baraza, what is a chumba, what is a wazi means. And then he can translate it into French more than we can do it. I think the coalition is the key, and the networks are the keys. But those networks should also be translocal. I don't believe in Tetz Modern coming to research about Waza, but I believe maybe in a young collective in Bogota who will understand in a very direct way, and maybe together we can go to Tetz Modern. You know, that's the strength of the coalitions, I think. And there exist such coalitions. We are part of two. One is named Arts Collaboratory. We have 25 organizations from Latin America, Africa, and Asia. And we work together with like very interesting collective from Indonesia, for instance. And another one is another roadmap for art education. It's dedicated specially to art education, and it includes a lot of organizations, including here in Berlin, in Zurich, but also in Kampala and Quito, for instance, like this. So it's very important to find coalitions where we can share content and then be stronger to articulate those ideas and inoculate those words into the language.
Are there any questions? Yes, Anna. Can you say something about what the name of Waza?
Waza
translation.
Waza, we translate it as imagine. So it's a work of imagination.
Yeah. Hi, thank you very much for your talk. I found it very interesting that, like, as soon as we talk about participatory art, we talk very fast about the production of art, like the conditions under which an art piece is made. And you talked about the messiness of it. And I'm very grateful that we also talk about the messiness and the struggles. And but that's just a comment. I wanted to ask if you could tell us more about the aesthetic Eboma Velo. Maybe you explained it and I didn't fully grasp it, but maybe you can say a little bit more about this, the aesthetic kill the bike concept. to introduce to the discourse.
Yes, it's something that you understand very easily, like even in popular songs. Esthétique Eboma Velo. What we call aesthetique, if you know Kinshasa a little bit, you will know in Kinshasa, I'm not from Kinshasa, so I can use our rivalry between two cities to provoke them. There's this tendency in Kinshasa they call les sapeurs, the people who dress very well. And Kinshasa is a very fashion place. So you need to be well-dressed, need to present well. And I think according to me, that quote is trying to create a kind of irony about that. When you have a bike and you want the bike to be beautiful, at the end the bike will not be able to operate as a bike. And I use this phrase for a project I was doing once, and a friend of mine said, okay, but that is a bike. If it was a car, it will continue to work because the car has a more stronger engine. And of course it doesn't mean that aesthetics is not, it's a bad thing. And we are an art center, and sometimes we have artsy decisions, as I showed you. So we are part of the problem as well, and we need to understand which part of the problem bears on us. But at the same time, we need to understand that we live in a specific context. We are discussing with people. We need to have respect towards, and we cannot just impose them everything we think is good for arts.
Any? I think I'm not sure. So how long do we have? No. no, the break, you mean? We have a 1 hour break. Exactly. I think for the discussion, we are over, we've already long past our limit. But so I'll just thank you all for being here. And thank you again, Patrick, for a wonderful presentation and for a nice conversation.
Thank you very much.
And see you in an hour. So 1 hour break.